Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let's head over to Australia now, because a long-running defamation case, which has been gripping the nation, came to a conclusion this week. Australia's federal court found, on the balance of probabilities, that Bruce Lehrman raped his colleague, ex-Liberal staffer Brittany Higgins, at Parliament House in 2019. This judgment came as Lehrman's multi-million dollar defamation case against Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson was thrown out of court. Brittany Higgins had been interviewed by 10's The Project in 2021 when she made the allegations. So what can we learn from this case in terms of defamation here in Aotearoa, and also the wide role of media and responsibilities of media in criminal cases, particularly in this year, 2024? Well, Stephen Price is a barrister specialising in media law. He practices in Wellington and he joins me now. Kia ora, Stephen.
Kia ora, Neil.
Nice to have you here. Now, this has been a very long-running and very complex case. I won't ask you to go through it page by page because there are hundreds upon hundreds of them. But the broad strokes of it, it's a very interesting case, really, this one, isn't it?
Yes, well, it's a lovely, sordid, salacious background to it that makes it great. But in terms of kind of defamation law, it's a fairly straightforward application of the truth defence. So the courts have to ask whether or not you've proved on balance of probabilities that it happened. And that's at the heart of it. That's what's gone on here. But we should probably get into the sordid stuff first, shouldn't we?
Yeah. I mean, would you mind just sort of going through, if you could, maybe the background to this? Because there was a criminal trial, but that trial was eventually discontinued. And then Mr. Lehrman made some, as it turns out, very ill-advised he made a very ill-advised decision after a news piece went to air. Yes.
I'll explain the hat, but everybody's talking about the hat.
Indeed.
Look, I have to, for a start, say, it's as you say, a very long judgment. It's like 150 pages long or so, like 1,000 paragraphs, and I haven't read it all. But I've kind of skimmed it and read bits of it. I think I've got a grasp on the background.
Sure.
So essentially these guys were, Lehrman and Brittany Higgins were colleagues who were working in an Australian senator's office, a federal senator's office, and he was kind of interested in her. They went out for drinks as part of a group, she had a lot to drink. She had probably a dozen drinks in two different pubs, mm-hmm. and then for reasons then Lehrman says he had left his keys in Parliament, and it was a bit of a process getting back into his flat. So, and apparently this was at 1:30 in the morning. Brittany, who was sloshed off her face, also, he says, wanted to go back to Parliament for reasons that aren't really very clear to me. Anyway, they both go back to Parliament and go through all the security to get in there. I think she says that he mentions that there's some whiskey there that he has, which the judge feels makes a lot more sense than this newly appointed young lady wanting to go back to Parliament at 1:30 in the morning on Saturday morning after drinking a dozen drinks. Anyway, they go back there and she falls asleep on a couch and wakes up and he's on top of her, according to her story, and that it's unconsensual and she tells him to stop and he doesn't. And his story is they didn't have sex at all. So that it sits there for a couple of years, as far as I can see. It doesn't hit the public domain before that. And then she agrees to give an interview and it becomes this big thing about parliamentary culture. An interview to Channel 10 on The Project where she doesn't name him but does say she was raped and sets up the circumstances. And then he is prosecuted for rape or sexual assault. And that falls over after she's given evidence because a juror, I think probably accesses stuff online, but ends up with some sort of an article about when you should believe rape complainants or when you shouldn't,
yes,
and circulates that amongst other jurors. And so that's the thing the judge has to go, well, that's not an evidence. You can't do that. Jurors are always tempted to go and Google things, but they're not allowed to, and they're told they're not allowed to. So that was the end of that trial. And in the end, he wasn't re-prosecuted because of Brittany's mental health. They thought it would be too much for her. So this is when the judge says he probably should have taken that one and just gone.
Yes.
But instead, having got out of the lion's den, he went back for his hat.
Indeed.
Part of a judgment. The judge has got lovely sort of turns of phrase.
Yeah.
Plain as a pike stuff, you'll say.
Quite poetic, yeah.
Story was stuff and nonsense.
Indeed, along with the whole, I can't describe porn, but I know when I see it. That's another good judge's sign, I think. Yes, and so, I mean, Bruce Lehman going back for his hat is sort of shorthand for... So all of this happened, and this criminal trial...
He sues for defamation.
Yes, he sues for defamation based on this interview.
Channel 10 for defamation, not her. And there's a whole lot of other lawsuits going on in the background that I haven't quite got my head around, but everybody's suing everybody about this.
Yeah.
So this is not the only case, but this is the big one, I think.
And so he's the aggressor in this. He is suing. The project at Channel 10. The project
and Lisa Wilkinson, who conducted the interview.
Indeed, in a civil case as opposed to a criminal case. And he's suing them for defamation. And this case has been running for many weeks. And the and so tell us a bit about the outcome and how the judge arrived at this outcome, if you could.
Yeah, well, you might be wondering, since I said that he wasn't named, how on earth he could sue. But the law there in Australia, which I have to say I'm not an expert on, but I know enough to know it's similar to New Zealand's, very similar to New Zealand's generally, it says you don't actually have to be named as long as you're identifiable to people who know you. They can work out that it's about you. And so the judge found fairly easily that there was enough descriptive detail there that people who knew him would have realised it was an accusation against him.
Yeah.
So he got over that hurdle. Although I think the judge would have said that the damages wouldn't have been all that high because there weren't that many people who could recognise him in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not worth millions. I think he might have said $20,000 if he'd won.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he got past that hurdle. But then it became a battle about whether or not he raped her, you know, whether or not it's true. Now, he, as a plaintiff, all you really have to prove is that something's been published, and published just means it's passed on to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell you something at the pub, I'm publishing it.
Yeah.
But certainly if I'm putting it on television, I'm publishing it then. And it has to be about you, and we've established that some people realise it was about him. And then it has to be defamatory. The meaning has to be defamatory.
Yeah.
And there are legal tests for that. But basically, if it reflects badly on your character, then it's defamatory.
It's lower, it lowers your esteem in the eyes of right-thinking people or something like that, right?
Excellent, Emil. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
That's the main test that's used. Does it lower you in the estimation of right-thinking members of society generally? That's kind of complicated in a bit old-fashioned, like who's right-thinking what does that mean exactly? So it's not usually argued very much. And there's a lot of arguments sometimes about what something means, but it's generally, if it says something bad about you, it's going to be defamatory.
Yeah.
So there wasn't any doubt that this was defamatory. But what it means is once you've proved those things, and also you probably have this, increasingly these days, a threshold of harm. You have to show that it's done some harm to you.
Hmm.
But once that's not hard to prove that someone has written a thing about you that criticises you in some way and causes you some harm. Not that hard. People might be surprised to find that a plaintiff doesn't have to prove that it was wrong or that there was any fault by the other person, but they don't. So it becomes up to the person who's published it. Here was Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson, to prove the truth. So the onus is on them to show that what they published was true.
Yes, because
it was published as an opinion.
Something can't be defamatory if it's true.
Right, although technically as a lawyer I'd probably say, well, it was defamatory but true. Yes.
Right, I see.
The different thing is defamation.
Indeed.
But yes, I'm splitting hairs. I'm doing a lawyer thing.
Well, as you should, I suppose, given that you are actually a lawyer. Right,
yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, what...
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so this is the thing. So Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson argue truth, and that means that all of this has to be interrogated in a civil court, and that is what happens, yeah?
Both of them gave evidence, as did a bunch of other people, and the judge spends a lot of time sort of going through that evidence and what people who were there remembered and what they said. There was CCTV footage at the pub. There were various texts, some of which actually Brittany Higgins had deleted a bit suspiciously. There was a lot of evidence, and the judge wanted to sort of work out whose story lined up best with the surrounding evidence, what other people were saying and what documents were saying. Mm. And that, I mean, experience has shown that is definitely the best way to work out what's happened, to see what aligns with stuff that was sent at the time and said at the time that you can be sure happened. And he was not that flattering about anyone.
About anyone, eh? Yeah, he absolutely ran roughshod over pretty much everybody who gave evidence here and said nobody could be trusted.
Well, a few of the people on the side. Yeah. But in terms of Brittany Higgins and in terms of Bruce Lerman, and actually Lisa Wilkinson, the journalist, we can come back to that, but there's another defence that relies on you publishing something and doing it reasonably. Mm. And the media tried to rely on that and fell flat on their faces. But anyway, in terms of the two main ones, the judge said, look, they're both lying. They both lied a lot.
Yeah.
But he's, again, the bits that I've read anyway show him being quite nuanced about this and sort of going, well, just because you lie about one thing doesn't mean you are a lying liar who lies about everything.
Yeah.
And it kind of depends on the context in which you've done the lie and what reasons you had and how many other, yeah, close it was the truth and how many other lies you told and things. It also is quite good, it seems to me, on rape myths, which he says, look, you know, sometimes you're going to behave, if you've been raped, you're going to behave in ways that might seem strange to people, including the things that you've said and your memory of things. You might make inconsistent statements. You might not go to the police. You might, in fact, still try and maintain some sort of relationship with the rapist, and none of that means you're lying.
Mm.
So it felt good to me that the judge was prepared to sort of say those things. Mm. And in the end, where we came down was, yes, she'd done a lot of strange things, and a lot of her story is consistent, and even taking into account all of that stuff about rape myths, she's crossed the line, and she's been dishonest in many ways, including in deleting stuff from her phone that was unflattering, and kind of making up, he says, or maybe, I mean, her story was actually, there was a cover-up by the powers that be at Parliament, and he says, that's really not what happened. It's not consistent with the evidence around it. And so there was a lot of things that she was clearly wrong about, and some of those things that she clearly lied about. But when it came right down to it, Bruce Lerman was a much bigger liar and, like, more blatant and self-serving. Mm. And I mean, he would lie about things that were obviously going to be fixed, were going to be corrected once you saw the CCTV stuff. Mm. Oh, no, I didn't buy her any drinks. I just had one drink, and I didn't really know her, and, you know, I didn't really have much to do with her that night when we went to the pub.
Mm.
Well, no, actually, you bought her lots of drinks. You were right next to her. You were kissing her.
Yeah, and we can see this. We can see this on the footage. Right. Yeah, the camera doesn't lie in this situation. And I guess that's one of the things that I found really interesting about this case in sort of a zoomed-out sense was...
I should say, I don't know that the camera picked up any kissing.
But yeah, indeed.
One of the witnesses there that the judge found very reliable said, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough, and thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah,
I guess the thing that I sort of found really interesting about this is when it comes to, defamation is one of those things where everybody knows what it means, but maybe not everybody knows what it takes to prove it. And, threatening defamation often has the effect of making someone withdraw their statements or you know, say, oh, yes, sorry, yeah, we'll correct the story. And I suppose, you know, it is every person's right to exercise their legal rights, but this is kind of, I suppose, yeah, the hubris of getting away from something, from culpability for your actions, maybe on technicality, but then going back for more as the judge, you know, asserted in that judgment.
Yeah, no, you've raised a lot of points there. I mean, it's possible that some people, and in fact, this might have been what Bruce Lemon wanted, probably was actually. He was being bullying and was trying to shut down the criticism and get it retracted. And there are people who are wealthy who can do that. And they're doing it against somebody who doesn't have the money and can look at a defamation lawsuit, which can easily run, you know, upwards of $100,000. And you're not going to get those costs back. You just can't afford to do that. Even some media organisations are going to struggle with that. They don't want to have to go through that, and there might be a degree of risk involved. And even if they are right, they might be found to be wrong and then have to pay damages. So the law of defamation can be used in a bullying way, and sometimes is. But here you had a big media organisation with deep pockets and good lawyers that fought it. And it's heartening.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this comes pretty much straight on the heels of that, the Ben Robert Smith case.
Indeed.
The Australian soldier,
yeah,
who, you know, the decorated soldier who everybody loved, and who was found to have committed war crimes. Mm. Again, he called them on it. He brought the lawsuit, and they found that the allegations against him were true.
I suppose the thing that...
So it's heartening.
It's heartening, yeah, yeah. And I suppose...
I think it can trust courts to get this right, which I do. I mean, it's a really careful, long judgment.
It's a win, I suppose, for the media outlets involved, both this one and the Ben Robert Smith case. Although I think that I'm right in saying that Channel 10 copped a bit of criticism in the judgment for the way that it treated that story.
Yeah, no, I was hinting at that earlier on. So they were trying to run this argument that said that their publication was reasonable. And we have a defence here that actually came out of a case that that I was involved in arguing, which is called responsible communication in the public interest. And essentially, if you can show that you're publishing something in the public interest and you've behaved responsibly, then even if you ended up getting it wrong, you've got a defence. Now, they've got something analogous to that in New South Wales. And the judge sort of then analysed the conduct of the media to sort of see whether it was responsible, what is reasonable, is the phrase there, and said, you guys just ran this interview, despite the fact that there were some glaring inconsistencies in her story and the evidence behind it, and what's more, you didn't even bother to contact Lerman, who you could have found really easily. So those things were not reasonable, or in New Zealand, they were not responsible, and so their defence wouldn't have been available, and it wasn't.
I suppose the broader...
So they were lucky that the judge believed Brittany Higgins on the crucial point of what happened when she woke up that night.
Yeah. I suppose one of the interesting things about these big defamation cases like this, which tend to be quite sensational, given, you know, the high bars and the teams of lawyers involved and big media organisations and so on and so forth, is, you know, it does draw attention to the decisions that have to be made when you're reporting on high stakes or fast moving stories. We saw a couple of days ago, Stephen, Channel 7 in Australia identify and broadcast the wrong perpetrator in the Bondi stabbing. Did you see that? And I note that so Channel 7 named the stabber as quote 40-year-old lone wolf attacker Benjamin Cohen. And he was not the stabber at all. And I see now that Benjamin Cohen, who was wrongly named, has hired Rebecca Giles, the massive defamation law specialist in Australia. You have to be so careful as a media organisation when you are reporting on this stuff, don't you? Especially in this age.
Yes, and especially with a hot story like that. I don't know any of the details of that. I mean, if they've got it from police, and it's possible that they're behaving reasonably in that situation, although I don't know.
It throws up those tensions, though, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, you as a media organisation in a fast-moving story like that, you want to be first, you want to get the story first, but much more important than that is being accurate. And there is always a balance there, but you must lean more towards accuracy than speed.
Well, I think you and I would say that, and but in the heat of the moment, there are news organisations who would also say that, who go a little bit far, because the temptation is always there to do that. I mean, news organisations get things wrong. They get things wrong all the time, and it's the good ones will fix it up fast and won't, and will do it less often and will be more careful. But there are always going to be mistakes, and some of them are going to be going to be doozies. I expect that one will be an expensive mistake. But often they will happen, when, you know, when the stakes are high and stuff's changing a lot and it's very difficult to check things. But then you're well advised to be, if you have to publish something like that, be like, hedge it.
Hedge it.
We haven't been able to check this, but we've heard this from this person. Police are telling us this. I don't know.
Exactly. No, I take your point. Yes, use some of those phrases that can help you out in such
situations.
Won't
necessarily save you, but it'll put you in a much better position.
Indeed. Stephen, just finally on this, we've talked about the difference between criminal and civil trials, and of course this was a civil case, which I understand has a lower bar of proof than a criminal case.
Right.
But could this outcome lead to a new criminal case against Bruce Learman here, or do we simply not know that at this point in time?
I understand that's technically possible.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't, the jury never sort of reached a decision on his trial, so it's not a case of being acquitted and then facing another one. He just wasn't. But whether they would do that after all this time, and the judge was very clear about what he had to do. So whether on balance of probabilities it was likely that she'd been sexually assaulted. And that entailed him knowing she wasn't consenting. But he said, I've looked at all the evidence, and on balance, that's what I find. But I'm not finding, beyond reasonable doubt, that that's what happened. And that's, I mean, if you want to put it in the numbers, it's like 51% likely compared with 95% likely, which is quite a big difference.
Indeed. No, it'll certainly be one to watch anyway. Stephen Price, thanks very much for coming on and chatting about that this evening. It's really interesting stuff.
No, sweet. Cheers.
That is Stephen Price, who's a barrister who specialises in media law and practices in Wellington.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.